on this final Monday of February. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Governor Evers has said he'd veto any bill that makes it harder to vote. The state legislature sent a raft of voting and election bills to the governor Thursday. The legislation, part of a trend seen around the country to reshape election law after former President Trump lost the 2020 election. So what is on your mind as floor periods come to a close? What bill do you want to ask about? Where do you see lawmakers finding common ground? 800-642-1234. Sean Johnson is Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. Sean, welcome back.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Let's take stock of where we're at here. In a midterm election year, is it normal for the legislature to adjourn for the year in February or March?
It, in Wisconsin, is something that happens a lot. Yeah. So February, March, it used to be, you know, at least in my time here, that they would meet into April. But the early adjournment year in or the early adjournment in an election year is a little bit jarring, but it's common in Wisconsin state government where you have this 2-year session. So we're still in the session that started in January of 2021. And that's the way that they operate here.
What about a special session that Governor Evers wants to see happen? Is there any possibility of that?
I think at this point, any of the special sessions that the governor's calling for are for, you know, like for his tax cut, for example, the tax rebate that he wants to do. Republicans have already said that's not going to happen. On other issues, he's called special sessions when, I mean, he's kind of in a position where politically he can't get Republicans to do what he wants. So a special session at this point practically is a way for him to call attention to an issue and say, let it be known, you know, people of Wisconsin, this is where I stand. I'm doing everything I can. I called the special session. And, you know, the legislature, just the way that it operates here, is under no obligation to take up his special sessions. And as a rule, they haven't.
Let's look at these election and voting bills that lawmakers passed last week. Includes, you know, allowing election workers to get a one-day head start on canvassing absentee ballots. What of the proposals that you saw here, what stands out about this package?
So the early count, as it's referred to, it's actually they could start early, you know, processing absentee ballots early. I think that's interesting because it wasn't really part of this package that Republicans put together. You know, there are some of these bills that they basically introduced as a block, about 10 of them, where they knew what they wanted to do. They kind of brought it forward as a package, and that's the block of bills that is mostly going to be vetoed. This other bill that they passed toward the end of session on allowing central count locations to start processing their absentee ballots early, that is something that's a little bit more of a mystery in terms of would the governor sign it or not. It did not get a bipartisan vote in the legislature because it was attached to other stuff like new deadlines for clerks, for example. In fact, there are different versions that passed the Senate and the Assembly, but we talked a lot and we have talked a lot about, you know, Milwaukee's election results in 2020 came out at like 3 a.m, right? They said that was going to happen because they had a record number of absentee ballots that were cast. And so that should have been a surprise to no one who had been following it. But, you know, if in former President Donald Trump's case, he has used that to falsely claim that there was, you know, something amiss in Wisconsin's election. So this bill, if you would let a central count location like Milwaukee start to process these ballots early, could potentially lead to an earlier count, which could be good. But because it's attached to other stuff, because it wasn't really something that was in the works until it seemed like the last minute, I'm not sure what the governor's going to do there.
You know, what was interesting to me is that while, you know, Republicans lack the votes needed to overturn a veto by the governor, and it seems there's this growing number of constitutional amendments. Of course, these need to pass Senate and Assembly in two successive sessions before going to voters in a referendum. Do you see more of this type of tactic from Republicans going through this route of trying to get a referendum on a ballot?
It sure seems like it. Yeah. I haven't gone back and, you know, like asked the Legislative Reference Bureau how it's looked over time. But for me, this is a lot. You know, I haven't seen this kind of, I guess, just one after another constitutional amendments being proposed by the legislature. And it's, you know, there's a political angle to for them also. Practically, if they want to sidestep the governor, a constitutional amendment is the way to do it. You have to pass it in two consecutive sessions of the legislature. They know they're going to be under a Republican map, so the chances of the legislature being Republican next year are pretty good. And then it's got to go to voters and be approved by a majority of voters in a statewide election. So it's not an easy process, but it does sidestep the governor's veto. It's also a way for them, if they think they have something that's popular, of putting it on the ballot, potentially to try to drive up turnout on their side.
The election and voting bills, these are drafted after Trump began accusing Republican lawmakers last year of not doing enough to challenge his election loss. Do you feel that that backdrop of Trump and conspiracy theories about the outcome of the election casts these bills in a different light or an unfair light? I mean, are they doomed expressly because of that, of former President Trump?
I don't think you can look at, you know, election bills, proposed changes to election laws, particularly from Republicans, without considering that former President Trump, the leading candidate to be the GOP nomination to have the GOP nomination in 2024, that he is still saying that the election was stolen, that he's still saying, you know, falsely that he won Wisconsin. You can't look at this stuff without pausing and saying, all right, that's a thing and it's not going away. And so when you look at the Republican bills, they're born out of, an atmosphere where many of their voters, you know, particularly Republican base voters, are kind of where Donald Trump is. That said, there are some of these bills which are, I'm not sure what the word is on some of this stuff, aggressive in nature or a little more technical in nature, drafted by the Senate chair of the, you know, the Senate Selections Committee, Kathy Bernier. She's a former clerk.
Set to retire.
I'm not saying they're making it easier to vote, because I don't think you could look at them and characterize most of them that way. But they're not as like sweeping as others. You know, there's a bill by Senator Dewey Strobel, for example, that puts more hurdles in the absentee voting process. And backers of that plan have said, we want to make it more like in-person voting, but it does make it more complicated to vote absentee than it is now. So there's kind of a range when you look at how lawmakers are responding to these things. But the Trump factor is always there and has to be considered when you look at why Republicans are talking about this so much.
We're talking about a busy week in news from the state legislature with Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for Wisconsin Public Radio. You can join in on your thoughts on the session on these election and voting bills, 800-642-1234. Give us an update on the Gabelman probe. You know, Assembly Speaker Voss saying former Supreme Court Justice Michael Gabelman may submit his final report on the 2020 election, perhaps this week. What do you know there?
Voss had said pretty recently that he expected the report by the end of the month. So that's today. We know that there is a meeting of the Assembly Elections Committee scheduled for tomorrow, and Mike Gabelman is one of two invited speakers at that event. So then they're talking about the Gabelman report. So I would expect that that is coming soon. I don't know, you know, exactly what it's going to entail, and I don't think it's going to be the end of us talking about Mike Gabelman, because some of the stuff that he's doing has led to a lawsuit either filed by him or, you know, filed by a Democratic watchdog group. American Oversight has filed a lot of lawsuits challenging these Gableman subpoenas. So while the report might be out, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily the end of the story. I think the other thing that's kind of interesting is that this investigation from Gableman was, in theory, was to help Republicans draft legislation.
Craft legislation, right.
And that's like likely not going to happen because the assembly likely had its final session day of 2022 last week. Mm-hmm. So the report may say a lot of things, but it won't be that. It won't be a template for bills this session. But yeah, there's, for example, there's a case where Gableman has proposed jailing Wisconsin mayors if they don't comply with his subpoenas. There's not a hearing scheduled in that case until late April. So this could drag on a bit.
How long might he be on payroll in Wisconsin, or what are the costs here to this investigation?
That is another kind of outstanding question. As far as we know, the investigation was budgeted to go up to $676,000. And we don't know what their final costs are at this point, or if they, you know, we don't know that they're going over that number. But that was the number that we've been given so far.
Talking with WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson, taking us around the Capitol into politics and taking your questions. Have you been following the absentee drop box challenges? What should be the ultimate fate of ballot drop boxes in Wisconsin? What about breaking up Milwaukee public schools? Still time to talk legislation, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more State Cap with Sean Johnson here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing Wisconsin politics with WPR's own Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief. He's been covering the State Capitol for WPR since 2004. And Sean is with us for about nine more minutes. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is joining us from Delafield. Hi, Jeff.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking me a call. My first comment is I think the rhetoric from former President Trump is unfortunate in terms of stolen election and so on and so forth. It belittles, I think, and oversimplifies a larger consideration, and that's that there's a large number of people that don't like the way the 2020 election was conducted, and it doesn't mean it was stolen. It doesn't mean that the result is illegitimate, but there's a large number of people that just don't like the way rules were changed at the last minute, and they never agreed on what the rules of that election were to be. And our country depends on people trusting the result of an election, and that's why some of these reforms are so critically important. And, you know, it's unfortunate if they do cause some inconvenience for voting and maybe make voting as perceived less or more difficult. But that decision, your decision is so critical. Mm-hmm. And if it's that important to you, a little bit of inconvenience to protect the process should not be a big deal. And if we can't protect that process, we're not going to survive as a country. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you. Sean, you know, Jeff saying there, election integrity above all.
Yeah, I think the bills that Republicans tend to focus in on are the ones where the Wisconsin Elections Commission, you know, which was created by this legislature about 7 years ago now, less than 7 years ago, voted to give guidance to clerks that the, you know, the audit bureau, the legislative audit bureau, later came back and said, you know, that should have been run by the legislature first. You know, that should have been, that's the kind of thing that should have been promulgated as a rule. When you promulgate a rule, it gives the legislature a chance to block it. And because the Elections Commission didn't do that, they just, they voted, they took bipartisan votes to do this stuff. I think those are the issues where you hear Republicans saying we shouldn't have that again. And if you didn't have the president constantly asserting falsely that the election was stolen, changes like these might not get as much attention, but they get lumped in with everything else because you can't put on blinders when you look at this stuff, right? You have to kind of consider it as a whole. But some of these changes in another universe might be considered more mundane.
So meanwhile, the state high court, the Supreme Court, is ruling on absentee ballot drop boxes that they won't be allowed for April 5th elections. Can you explain what is going on with the high court?
What happened there is that the drop boxes were challenged by the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, a conservative law firm. They won in Waukesha County Circuit Court. That is, a Waukesha County judge said, I agree with you. Drop boxes don't appear in Wisconsin statutes. Therefore, they're not lawful, and ordered them to be immediately ended, basically, until told the Elections Commission, take back your guidance on drop boxes. They do not appear in the law. This was appealed. The Supreme Court said, you know, we can't make a change like this so close to the February election, because the Waukesha County ruling was handed down really close to the February primary. So they remain an option there. But then the court turned around a little bit later and said, there is enough time to make this change ahead of the April election while the case is being appealed. So the court is saying technically the Waukesha County ruling can stand while this appeal proceeds. That's not saying that the court will eventually agree with the Waukesha County court, you know, drop boxes, and what happens to them in November is still a very much an open question, but we know that they will not be an option while the case is being appealed.
Also, you know, what remains a mystery is redistricting and the high court. Do you get any sense there that is going to have a ruling soon?
I think there will be a ruling soon, given kind of the what the court was asking of parties in that case in terms of timing. Gave every indication that the ruling would be coming soon. We're at the end of February here. I wouldn't be surprised if you see one in the next couple weeks. And that won't necessarily be the end of the line on that case, because there is also a federal lawsuit that is pending. And even if the state Supreme Court acts on this, Democrats or groups that align with Democrats that have challenged this case could turn around and tell a federal court, hey, we still have a map here that's in violation of the Federal Voting Rights Act, and we need you to take up our challenge. So there could be more, you know, legal action in this to come, but the state Supreme Court's decision is going to be pretty important in terms of setting the foundation of what that map is going to look like. And we already know that it's either going to be Republican or really, really Republican, basically, based on the options that are before the court, because they've said we're going to adopt a least changes approach to redistricting, basically keep as much of the 2011 map, which was drawn by Republicans, as we can. And so when you start from that benchmark, whatever they're going to end up with is going to be Republican, but there is sort of an open question on whether it's going to be like veto-proof level Republican in the final map.
We'll be watching there. Talking with Sean Johnson, Capitol Bureau Chief for WPR, covering the state capitol for since 2004. You can join in 800-642-1234. I'm wondering if you can help us out, because Legislative Fiscal Bureau Director Bob Lang, we're talking with him tomorrow, and he has been at his post for more than four decades on work in the state legislature. Can you explain the Fiscal Bureau and the work it's done under his leadership?
Yeah, I mean, the Fiscal Bureau is... it is the brains of the operation in the state capitol, I guess. It's the legislature's nonpartisan budget office. So when a governor introduces a budget, or there's anything budget related, really, it goes to the Fiscal Bureau and they analyze it. They turn it into readable, understandable papers that lawmakers can learn from if they take the time. They basically make the information approachable for them so that they can make you know, educated decisions. And they are really, as an agency, as nonpartisan as they come. And I think it's because of Director Lang's leadership, who is really, I think he was probably the most trusted person in state government. And, you know, really, I don't think I can't say enough great things about him. He even makes time for reporters to help us understand stuff too, despite his busy schedule. So just a really tremendous person to have in Wisconsin state government.
This is also the bureau that tells us that we are sitting on a $3.8 billion budget surplus and crunching the numbers there.
It is the most awaited memo in state government when Bob Lang puts out his revenue estimates every so often and predicts whether it's going to be good times or bad. He's the one that turns those out. Yeah. So when we hear about projected surpluses or deficits, it starts there.
What will happen to this surplus? I mean, Evers wants some of it to go back to residents. Where are we at with what in our last final moments? What happens to the surplus?
As far as we know, it's just going to sit there this election year. And you're going to hear the governor talk about that, say like, look, I want to send this money to you, but Republicans are standing in the way. If Governor Evers wins re-election, he will have a lot of money to build a budget around, assuming that the projections hold. He'll have a lot of money to build a budget around to call for the priorities he wants, and more than likely a Republican legislature to deal with again on getting a final product. If a Republican wins the governor's race, they could use this surplus to try big things. You know, there are some in the Republican Party that want to eliminate the state's income tax and offset that with an increase in the sales tax potentially. That would be a big policy move. Well, and they would potentially rely on the surplus to do that.
Sean, thanks for joining us. Sean Johnson, Capital Bureau Chief on the Ideas Network.